back and they score! And Giroux's got it! He deflects it by Antiniemi! And the Flyers have some magic left as they win it in overtime!
Voracek cutting on in! Voracek to the middle of the shot! He scores!
It's time for the 5-Minute Major Podcast.
Seymour Gagné!
That's what the people came to see!
Now here's your hosts, Matt Mastrogiovanni and Dave Morris.
Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to another episode of 5-Minute Major Radio. Dave here. We are back. Thank you for being adjusted to our every other week schedule with my co-host, as always, broadcast partner in crime, Matt Giovanni. Matt, how's it going?
It's going well. I feel like this is we're in the calm before the storm right now, where we've seen a few transactions as of late in the last few days in the NHL, which we'll get to tonight in our Around the League segment. We have a Stanley Cup winner in the Tampa Bay Lightning. Spoiler alert. Not really, though, because it just happened, the other day?
6 days ago, I believe.
Yeah. And I have some thoughts on that, which we'll get to in a second here. But, I mean, looking ahead here, like I said, like we've talked about before in previous, I guess, last episode.
Two weeks ago.
We have the expansion draft for the Seattle Kraken coming up on the 21st.
1 week from tonight as we record.
Yes. But we have even sooner on Saturday, the 17th, this coming Saturday, is when each team around the NHL has to submit their protected list for players that will be protected from getting taken by Seattle in the expansion draft. So with the Flyers, obviously it'll be interesting to see who they protect, who they don't protect, who they expose, as is the lingo. But we've had a lot of interesting things going on in the past few days in the NHL, and hopefully it just ramps up from here.
Yeah, definitely. And as everyone knows, obviously, besides the expansion draft and players lists getting in and the first round of the entry draft being next Friday night, there is really the only tidbit of Flyers news to think of that we have to address before we even go into the Stanley Cup final and the Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning, Matt, unless there's more Flyers news. Really the only thing that the biggest news that came out, it's been the talk of the town this week, is of course a polarizing figure, especially on Flyers Twitter, is Jacob Voracek. He was informed by the team that they are not protecting him in the expansion draft, and they're leaving him unprotected. Mm-hmm. And that if Seattle does not choose him and take him in the draft, they will be looking to move on from him in another way, i.e. via trade. Pretty much something, it's writing's been on the wall for the past couple of years now. Voracek's not really the biggest fan favorite here in Philadelphia. He's had some certainly great moments. I think he's a guy who might have outstayed his welcome at a certain point. I still own the guy's sweater, and he did some great things in Orange and Black. But if this is the end for Jacob Voracek, I think he'll be looked back in a couple of years as one of the better players to don, the flying P.
Yeah, like you said, I think he's kind of, I won't say overworn his welcome, because he, along with everyone else, struggled this past season, mm-hmm. Just in almost every aspect of the game. But I don't know. I mean, it's just tough. Like, he seems like he would benefit. It would kind of mutually benefit both sides, where Voracek as an individual, if he were to go to Seattle or just get dealt somewhere for picks, another player, something along those lines, just traded somewhere instead of being taken in the expansion draft. I guess either way, he would probably benefit from a change of scenery. Yep. And the Flyers would end up with either cap room or prospects, picks, or both, or all three, or whatever. So, mm-hmm. I think if Voracek does end up leaving, it could be for the better. And it could, like I said, it could mutually benefit both sides, where Voracek can go somewhere else, play with different players. We've seen it before where players get changes of scenery and they do well. Or, I mean, hey, I don't even know at this point. And I guess we can talk about this too, going off the Voracek stuff. So we had Fletcher and assistant GM Brent Flaher speak the other day, yesterday. Yesterday. And it was like, tell us something we don't know, sort of, where, I mean, I can just go off the article here from the Flyers website. Number one, Fletcher is considering a variety of moves. Tell us something we don't know. Number two.
He's working them phones, right?
Yeah. The phones are ringing is like what I, and it's like, dude, like, no shit. Like, it's the off season and you have players that people might want. So every team's phone is ringing.
I don't know if you saw these tweets, Mastro, but friend of the pod, Mikey D from Orange and Black Pack, and Evil Gritty had a nice little exchange. Evil Gritty is a great follow on Twitter for those who don't already follow him. Mm-hmm. He posted the quote of Chuck Fletcher, you know, working the phones, and Mikey replied back with like the phone, and the picture was like a kiddie like toy phone.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll just say at this point, and even before this point, talk is cheap. We want to see things actually happen.
Manned action.
Yes, and I'm hoping as that they do happen.
Now, you're a results guy.
Exactly.
Your results podcast.
Yeah, but like I said before when we started the episode, a lot of it is speculation at this point because who the hell knows what's going to happen later tonight even, maybe not, or just in the coming days when obviously the expansion draft is happening, the entry draft, free agency, all that stuff. So things might get spicy, as they say. But number two on the bullet list here for Fletcher and Flaher's press conference, the first round pick is available for trade at the right price. Again, no tell shit. Us something we don't know. The Flyers have the 13th overall pick, I believe.
Well, they're technically picking, they're slated to pick 14th because the 11th overall pick by Arizona was forfeited because they are cheaters. Mm-hmm. So in reality, everyone is moving up one spot. So 13th.
But, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I believe either Fletcher or Flaher said that they would trade that pick if it were to bring the team a player who had some sort of longevity or was able to sign a long-term deal if they didn't already have tenure for a contract. So we'll see what happens with that. Number three, we have defensemen and two-way forwards are a top priority. Again, tell us something we don't know. The Flyers are in need of that, quote, Matt Niskanen-type defenseman still to play alongside Ivan Provorov, as we saw last season again. Provorov doesn't seem to be ready to be that true number one guy. So he still needs a veteran presence, as they say, to kind of steady him on the blue line. And then two-way forwards, the Flyers just need some sort of pure goal scorer, a sniper, a two-way forward.
I think the problem, they have too many two-way forwards.
Yeah, you need a... If anything, I guess you need a, like I just said, you need a just a goal scorer, like a pure goal scorer. And I guess we can get into kind of that later as well with more speculation that's come out. And the Flyers' name has been in the mix with that. But, I mean, again, number four, RFA negotiations will begin in earnest later in the summer. The Flyers' three notable RFAs this summer, goaltender Carter Hart, who's hopefully, I don't even want to say obviously, hopefully gets paid. Center Nolan Patrick, who the hell knows what's going to happen with him. There's been rumors surrounding that he wants to get traded. And then defenseman Travis Sanheim. So it also says that only Sanheim is eligible to file for arbitration. But Fletcher said he anticipates getting all of those RFAs signed this offseason. But it's also his not his top immediate priority. And this one's kind of interesting too. I guess more of an off-ice thing, but changes have been made in hockey operations personnel. Fletcher, the article states, Fletcher did not want to run down a full list, but he did indicate that the organization has made changes within the hockey ops side this offseason. Quote, we've made a lot of personnel moves that we'll announce in short order. We spent 2 months doing this stuff, so we have a lot of changes to announce here in the new and near future. We've worked pretty hard to that. I think we're in pretty good position going forward, he said. I saw something somewhere. I'm not sure who it was from. I think it was on Twitter where the training staff or something like that has been kind of not re-educated or I guess retooled maybe, where since gyms and stuff are open again or like in Canada or obviously in the US, but I don't know. We don't need any more excuses from this organization. Again, like you said, Dave, we demand action at this point. They can talk until the cows come home, but like I said, this next month or so, I think is going to be crucial for the immediate future of this team.
Yeah, it's funny. I was kind of just like reading through, like obviously, you know, with the press conference being during working hours, you can't like people like us who are working, you know, the good old, you know, you. Master, you work like the 6 to 2 and I work the 9 to 5. Like you can't take your time out to watch that. Obviously, especially you doing landscaping, you know, you'd run your lawnmower into a tree or something while if you were watching the press conference.
Actually, so I was on my lunch break the other day when the press conference was happening, and I don't know if anyone else was having the same problems, but the Flyers were doing like the live stream of it on their Twitter.
And the sound didn't work.
And there was no sound.
Yeah, there was a lot of tweets about that.
Yeah. Inside job, question mark?
I know Charlie O'Connor posted his own stream or YouTube link for it, and that seemed to work for everyone. So, once again, Charles O'Connor coming through in clutch for all of Flyers Twitter.
Charlie's always got it for us.
But my kind of point about this press conference is when you saw everything come out, everyone's like what you said, Matt, like, tell us something we didn't know. Like, the fan base has already known all of this, and I feel like, the Flyers... I need to correct myself as per Jim Jackson. Flyers Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So Flyers social media fans had known all this. And we have been telling the team, at least the @NHL Flyers Twitter profile, all of these things. So all this press conference did was really just rile up the fan base and go, okay, why are you doing this? Because we already know all this. So I actually go out and do it. And I just feel like you created a lot of animosity and anger towards the organization when you didn't need to. Like, I guess it's cool to get the beat reporters in, and it's good to do a press conference before the expansion draft and the entry draft. Like, that's cool and fine, but like, you didn't talk about that. You talked about things we already knew, and we knew, in fact, we expect this team to do this offseason. Mm-hmm. And I love the good old quote, you know, we're angry at last year, and last year was unacceptable. Okay, well, again, duh. Like, and I felt bad. I know one of their tweets, @NHL Flyers has not been a very positive environment on the Twitter world right now. And they tweeted something out and I just tweeted back. I was like, I feel so bad for the intern who decided to hit send on this tweet because you're getting torched. And it's like, that's just the case. Like, the Flyers need to realize that this fan base, well, at least the social media portion of this fan base, mm-hmm. is extremely angry and upset.
Yeah.
And you need to cross off a couple bullet points to get, you know, these people back in your graces. And a lot of the media is even a little upset. You know, a portion of the media that are less professional and are more phantoms, mm-hmm. not phantoms, but more fan, that are, they have more of a fandom.
Yeah.
Besides their media outlet, you know, they're being very critical and right so of this organization. And the jokes are being thrown around that, oh, this year upcoming is an even year, so they're going to make the playoffs and look good again, and we'll get tricked. And no, I want the team actually to look good again, and I want the team to look good again and put confidence in us that this is legit this time.
Yeah, I mean,
we did our time. You know, we've done enough waiting. And, they got to make moves.
It makes me personally a little bit more comfortable knowing that at least Fletcher knows that he needs to get his act together and make the necessary changes in order to get this team back in the mix to be not even a contender at this point after last year. Just, hell, make them good again. Like, make them fun to watch. Yeah, because, again, I don't want to open this can of worms again, but quickly, it's different when the team is bad, but when they're not even entertaining, that is worse than them being bad.
It's like being a New York Islanders fan all the time.
Yeah, that's what we had for the majority of last season. Well, at least after the COVID pause, when things went downhill at Lake Tahoe. But yeah, I mean, just poor Flyers Twitter accounts, poor Flyers social media accounts, because they posted something earlier today where it was like, let's get to work. And there was a picture of Fletcher, and then there was a quote where it's like, we know what we need to do, blah, blah, blah. I'm loosely paraphrasing, but I just remember I was sitting on my phone reading the replies, and everyone is like literally just jumping down their throats about anything negative about this team. And I'm just like, man, like, it's a good quote, but also, again, I think the way that Flyers social media is just so, like, it can be so toxic sometimes, where you get just drug into the mud with everyone else, where you just, you can't help but to be apathetic and almost borderline nasty, like, on social media when it comes to anything this team posts. Where, again, I'll call back to the fact where the team is in complete disarray, and then we have a video of Gritty hitting a golf ball and saying, like, happy Masters week, and you have people just absolutely ratioing the video about, like, trade Farabee, trade JVR, trade Voracek, trade the whole team, trade Hart, Hart's a bust. Like, it's like, gee, like, damn, like, I can't even, if I'm anyone that runs the Flyers social media accounts, it's like, you literally are, like, you're hitting tweet with, like, a 10-foot pole away from the phone. And then
you're running away.
And then you run away. You put the phone on mute and run away. You throw the – lock the phone in a safe so you don't even have to see anything.
Throw a grenade out the window. You blow your phone up.
I mean, the mentions in those accounts must be horrendous. Like, and we probably haven't even seen the worst of some of them. But, I mean, again, I think the quotes from Fletcher and Flahr – didn't really move the scales anywhere for a lot of people, but again, it is nice to see that they know things are bad and that they have to actively do their jobs to make this team better.
That's literally all we're asking Chuck Fletcher is to do your job. Like, you were hired as a GM, and you were hired, like we said on previous podcasts, you were hired to not be Ron Hextall. You were hired to take this team to the next level.
Yeah.
Now do it. And you already had a lot of the fan base questionable about the hire because of his career path in Minnesota, where they were the white bread of hockey for almost a decade. And you know, is this really the guy? He had 1 year where you thought
Minnesota might be reverting back to that with what we'll
get into that later and around the league. Yeah. It's a little nice little teaser there. But, like, with Chuck Fletcher so far, you had one good year, and you've had one really bad year.
Yeah.
So, we're kind of like, he's starting the same, kind of like as Ron Hextall did. So, we're going to have to see where things really go from here. You know, I'm hoping there's some action. You know, obviously, with the entry draft coming up Wednesday, and the entry draft coming up Friday night, like, I am looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to the start of ESPN's hockey coverage. But hopefully something good happens. I personally am of the ilk that you need to trade this 13th overall pick. The draft this year to me, I don't think because of COVID and how it affected the scouting departments.
I can confidently say that I do not know one name on the draft board right now.
Yeah, I think I know.
I don't know if that makes me a bad hockey personality, but. I can confidently say that because, like you just said, the whole COVID thing and the majority of these leagues not even playing or not even – and it's like, how the hell are you supposed to scout anyone at this point?
I know the kid who's supposed to go first overall plays defense for the University of Michigan, so boo right there.
Power?
Yeah, Owen Power, and he's already apparently said that he's probably going to go back to school after getting picked. So good luck, Buffalo. If I'm Owen Powers, I hold out my old 4 years of college eligibility and I sign somewhere else that's actually going to be good and I don't go to the Buffalo Sabres. But I am in the ilk because of how COVID's affected the scouting department. You don't know what you're going to be picking. So every draft pick this draft if you can package it in a trade that makes this team better this year, do it. I don't care if we don't draft a single player this summer.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do something that helps build this team to get them to the caliber where they're a contender again, do it and do it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, I guess we can kind of wrap the Flyers coverage up here because we have other stuff to talk about, but we're tired of waiting. And like you said, they should be in win now mode, because if they do make the right moves this offseason, then they can kind of reopen that window for them to win, dare I say, them to win a Stanley Cup. But
they need a lot of help.
Yeah. But speaking of Stanley Cup, segue. If you didn't know, the Tampa Bay Lightning won their second consecutive Stanley Cup after winning it last year in the bubble in Edmonton. But this year, I guess it was good for them. They won it in front of, I believe, a little over 18,000 of their home fans in Tampa Bay.
They had a full barn.
Did they?
Yeah, full barn. Oh.
All right. Well,
I guess just around 18,000. That's how much I think Florida. Emily Arena holds.
All right. Gotcha. It's Florida. I guess they were like, hey, we're Florida. We don't give
a
shit.
What is COVID?
Yeah.
They've been acting like what is COVID since last year.
Yeah. But we'll recap this quick, and I have some thoughts here, Dave, as I said before we started recording. Yes. But on the stats side of things, the Tampa Bay Lightning took down the Montreal Canadiens 4-1. So they took them down in 5 games. Tampa Bay clinched the cup win with a 1-0 win over Montreal, like I said, in Tampa Bay. Andre Vasilevsky shutting out his 5th consecutive series clinching shutout.
Yep.
Going back to the Stars series when they won the cup last season in the bubble. So Tampa, as everyone has said since last season and going into last week when they won their cup again, is just an absolute wagon. Kucherov coming back after missing the entire regular season. And I think he had the most points in the playoffs out of everyone. Andre Vasilevsky being unreal, as he has been. Just all around Tampa Bay, every aspect of the game.
Winning the Conn Smythe, too.
Yeah, winning the Conn Smythe. Montreal just pretty, very overmatched in a lot
of
aspects.
Did not belong.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to feel for Carey Price. I feel like you feel for everyone that's on a losing side of a Stanley Cup final, because I can't even imagine being an NHL player and you have a chance to make your childhood dream come true of winning a Stanley Cup. And, like, I mean, losing to the Lightning, but let alone losing in general, is, like, got to be just heartbreaking, soul-crushing, any way you want to call it, especially if you're Brendan Gallagher, because he also got robbed.
Yep.
When he got home, but the TikTok he made was hilarious, with Pitbull saying, been there, done that, and he just takes a bite out of his sandwich. But, I mean, again, you got to feel for the guys on the losing side of that, where they work so hard throughout all this season, and obviously this past season being a COVID season, just being unlike any other season that we may ever see again in our lifetime, at least, maybe, who knows. But, it was a wild ride from the regular season all the way up to the Stanley Cup final, but Tampa Bay just had answers for everything, everyone and everything. And I'll get to this now, but I love the playoffs and all that, and this year's playoffs was no different. It was great seeing fans come back to arenas, all that stuff. A lot of exciting games, a lot, as usual, it was unpredictable, with teams winning that we didn't think were going to win, teams losing that we didn't think were going to lose, all that stuff surrounding it. But seeing Tampa Bay win this cup didn't really have the same, like, magical feel for me as other years do. I don't know why. And I don't want to say it's because of the whole, like, oh, they were over the cap thing, because, again, like we've said before, that's in the NHL Player Association.
The CBA. Part.
It's in the CBA, yeah. So, like, they technically, they didn't do anything illegal, but it's also, like, I don't know. I mean, I just, like I said, it didn't have that pizzazz for me this year for some reason. I think it was just because you kind of expected that the Lightning were going to do this again to some degree, where it was like, all right, like, they steamrolled they didn't steamroll the Panthers, but they beat the Panthers kind of easily. They easily handled the Carolina Hurricanes. They went the distance with the Islanders in that 7-game series. And then, I mean, Montreal was just kind of that team of destiny where they made it a lot further than anyone thought they were going to make it. And then they obviously, it's literally was like a David Goliath situation where they go up against an absolute juggernaut in the Lightning. And yeah, I mean, I think it was just because it was such a dominant series by the Lightning where it was like, you love when it's the Stanley Cup final, you want it to be more of a back and forth.
Yes.
And I think that's why for me personally, it didn't feel like it didn't feel as cool as it usually does.
Dare I say it was a boring Cup final?
I don't think you have to dare to say that. I think a lot of people are saying that.
Like last week, I had to miss the Cup coaching game because I had a beer league game. And I was like, okay. You know, Ross Colton, local New Jersey kids, gets the game winner. Like, that's awesome. Props to him. But, like, in the Cup final, like you said, Master, you expect more of a back-to-back, and you expect, like, both teams are meant to be there. Mm-hmm. The Montreal Canadiens were a team of destiny and were a Cinderella story. And just, if this was a normal year, they wouldn't have even made the playoffs. Like, they would have been one of the worst teams in the Atlantic Division. But because of COVID and they got hot from Carey Price and Toronto choked, you know, they advanced. So thank you, Toronto. You put us through that boredom. This is all Toronto's fault. it's just like Montreal. You could tell, like, Montreal's one win, that overtime win in game four, they got lucky. They won early and they went off a quick break from Josh Anderson, and I was like, God damn it, Tampa. Because I wanted the sweep because it was boring. Like, the games were not – I feel like game four was the best game of the whole entire series because that was the game the most that Montreal looked like they belonged in the entire series. And, of course, it's the one that they win.
Yeah.
But, I mean, games one and game one was an easy win for Tampa. Game two, there was some adversity. Game three steamrolled them, and then game five was kind of a defensive trap battle that reminded you of like the New Jersey Devils, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that just bore you to death. And then there was that one goal, and then they held on to win it playing great defense and great shot blocking by Ryan McDonagh in the end, and Vasilevsky with some great saves. You know, it wasn't like a marquee Stanley Cup matchup, and just like that can't happen again. Like, I'm perfectly fine with an eight seed making a run to the Cup final, because an eight seed in hockey, like, you can have a good team be an 8 overall seed. Like, that happens. But like the Montreal Canadiens were like a 14th place team. Like, they were not good. And like, I'm not, like, Carey Price was phenomenal in these playoffs. Like, the best run of his entire career. But, like, I don't feel bad saying that they didn't belong there.
No.
And you put a lot of hockey fans through some tough watches. Because, you know, only the diehard fans were going to, outside of Montreal and Tampa, only the diehard fans were going to watch this series.
Well, it's like you said, I mean, you were kind of, not apathetic, but like you were like, I don't need to watch this cup clinching game
when they
won game five. Because like I did the same thing. Like, usually when if the Flyers aren't in it, I'm not going to watch every single playoff game because I don't have a dog in the fight. I just like to see like what games are on when I'm available, like any other person would. But especially this series going into it, I was like, all right, like, I'll probably watch the first game, and then based off of that first game, I might not watch any other game until someone can actually win the cup. And that's almost what I did, where I watched I watched most of the first game, some of the second game, some of the third game. And then once I obviously knew it was 3-0 Tampa, I watched that game four. I only even watched the second half of game four because I was like, all right, obviously they're not going to win it like right away. Or like if I turn on a game and it's a blowout, I'll just watch the rest of it and watch Tampa hoist the cup. But like you said, I almost rather would have had them sweep and win in overtime in Montreal, because then it would have at least been like, oh, like, that's pretty exciting, like a Stanley Cup overtime winning goal. Like, a sweep is a little bit not bittersweet, but boring for a cup final. But, I mean, again, it was one of those things where I was like, again, I was excited that it's a cup final. You always love to see the cup get hoisted, all the guys skating around, all that. But it was like, all right, like kind of glad this is over and we can move on, because I think with all that happened this past season, just around the entire league with the realignment, all the reseeding in the playoffs, I mean, we saw two division teams going at it in the Stanley Cup final, which we won't see again next season, at least, because bleeding into around the league a little bit here, but the NHL is planning on doing regular divisions next season and returning to that 82 game schedule, thank God. But I mean, we won't have to see two teams from the same division play each other in a Stanley Cup final. And then, again, it was cool seeing teams play each other that would normally not play each other in the playoffs, but I'm sure all these guys are happy that they don't have to play the same, seven teams, eight games apiece. So I just think that these last two seasons have obviously been so different because of COVID, but now it's like next season things can finally legit get back to normal, and we have a new team coming in with the Kraken. So it's like 2 years of I don't want to call it mediocre hockey, but 2 years of strange hockey. Yes. Hopefully paved the way for the next, hopefully, X amount of years of unreal hockey, where we have ESPN covering hockey now, we have TNT, we have TNT and what?
TBS,
yeah. But there's a lot of new things on the horizon for the NHL, which I think we're definitely both excited about. I'm sure I can speak for you, Dave, when I say that. And I can speak for a ton of other hockey fans. So there's a lot to look forward to here. And aside from a semi-boring Stanley Cup final, like I said, that's over and done with. The Lightning dented the hell out of the Stanley Cup, which I thought was funny. But, I mean, hell, like I said, we can finally move on now, and the speculation can go into overdrive.
Yeah, and there was one good thing to come out of this Cup final, and that was Nikita Kucherov's press conference afterwards, where he was a zillion Bud Lights deep.
Yep.
And number one bullshit, his Vasilevsky rant, and his shit-talking of the Montreal Canadiens fan base, acting like they won the cup when they won an overtime in Game 4.
Yeah.
His comments right there in that press conference and his T-shirts that he's worn during the boat parade will make the first Montreal-Tampa game a must-watch game, especially in Montreal. Like, that first game where Tampa visits the Bell Center, I'm going to make sure I'm watching that game. because that's what it's going to carry over, and the Habs are going to use that as motivation. But I personally love it. You know, I saw Kucherov getting a lot of grief and flack on Twitter for being, like, uncool and not sportsmanlike and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, this is exactly what the NHL needs.
Yeah.
All these people complain that the league doesn't have any hockey, doesn't have any personality. Well, there you go. That was almost NFL, NBA borderline, you know, bragging and insults thrown at your opponent that you just beat. That's personality. That's going to grow the game. Like, that's good. Like, I'm happy. Like, and then he announces that he signs a deal to be a Bud Light sponsored athlete. You know, that's fantastic. You know, those are all good things. You know, I get if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, you might be butthurt, but suck it up. Make sure you have a better team next time. Get mad at Mark Bergevin for not building this team properly. You know, get mad at Jeff Molson for not being a good owner. Like, it's like, sorry you rooted for a shitty hockey team that went way too far than it should have gone. Tampa was better than you, and you were over cocky French assholes, and Tampa shoved it up your hoop. Sorry, not sorry. That's what happened. Live with it. You know. Actually,
so we have, while we're on the subject, we have some some breaking news here regarding the Montreal Canadiens, but specifically regarding Shea Weber. So over the Twitter wire from TVA Sports, the Canadian, French-Canadian TV yes. affiliate, more specifically, I've butchered this guy's name before, and I always feel bad when
Rene
I do it.
Rene Lebois?
Yeah, him. So he tweeted...
that guy?
Yeah. So he tweeted saying, quote, I'm hearing the at Canadiens MTL won't protect Shea Weber for the expansion draft. Following the latest medical evaluations, he could miss all of next season, if not more. He continued saying, obviously Shea Weber won't miss time only because of his thumb injury. He has some issues with the foot, ankle, and a knee. So that's why he won't be protected for the expansion draft, and you have to expect he'll be out for a long period of time. So is it safe to say that Montreal may not make the playoffs next season, even though they made it to the Cup final?
Mastro, mark it down here, 8:25 p.m. on July 14th, 2021. Dave Morris, you can quote me, the Montreal Canadiens will not be in the Stanley Cup playoffs next season. In fact, they will be one of the league's worst teams.
Yeah.
You can quote me. And if I'm wrong, you know me, Matt, I'll own up to it next year. But as of 8:25 p.m. on July 14th, 2021, Montreal Canadiens will be absolute hot garbage next year.
All right. I can dig it for now, at least. But that's obviously big news out of Montreal.
There's no way Seattle's taking. His cap hit's way too big, thanks, Paul Holmgren. They're not going to pick, you know, I mean, he did play his junior hockey out there in West, and he's from BC.
Yeah.
But, like, Seattle's not taking Shea Weber.
No. Yeah, I
and
mean.
And that's their captain. Like, you're not going to protect your captain. That's just a bad look.
But. Yeah. Well, so, and then Pierre LeBrun kind of followed up, too, and said that nothing's set in stone yet, but it is likely that they do not protect him. So, but again, that doesn't make, like, that doesn't make it set in stone, too, that Seattle's
not going to take him.
So, I mean, again, obviously for people listening, but whoever, just because a player is not protected in the expansion draft doesn't mean they're automatically getting taken by Seattle. That's common sense.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a kick in the nuts to players that don't get protected. But it also can be, hopefully, for some Flyers, it could be a kick in the ass. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. But I think that wraps it up for our Stanley Cup final talk. Mm-hmm. And again, congrats to the Lightning on their second consecutive cup. But Dave, what say we take an ad break before we go around the league?
Yeah, real quick before we take the ad break to go. And one last thing on the Lightning is the Dynasty Awards being thrown around. And, you know, John Cooper's been the coach of this team for the past 8 seasons. In, I think, 5 of those seasons, they made the conference final. And in three of those seasons, they've been the Stanley Cup final, and they've won 2 cups. So, and granted, while this team is going to have some cap casualties, and they're not going to be the same group,
yep.
They're still going to be a very dangerous club, and they could even have a chance for a three-peat next year. Like, they will be a top team in this league next year. So, you know, and John Cooper probably is already, you know, he's going to have a chance to be one of the winningest coaches all time, I feel like, in NHL history, especially in Tampa Bay Lightning history. And I think he might have already punched his ticket to the Hall of Fame. So.
Bold statement.
I just bring him, you know, bold statements. That's what I do here if I have a major radio. But with that, we will now conclude our Stanley Cup final coverage. And we will take this ad break, and we'll be back with Around the League. And we are back here at 5 Minute Major Radio. Mastro, why don't you go ahead and take us around the league?
Sounds good. I'm just trying to figure out where we're going to start on the road tonight. I guess we can start with a pair of retirements here with a couple of players. I don't want to offend anyone, but I would say one is more notable than the other.
Yes.
Both definitely notable, but one more notable than the other. So first off, we have longtime goaltender for the Nashville Predators, Pekka Rinne, announced his retirement yesterday from the NHL after 13 seasons, all with the Nashville Predators. According to the article from NHL.com. The 38-year-old goalie is the regular season leader in games, starts, wins, shutouts, goals against average, and saves. So pretty much everything in regards to Nashville Predators goalies. Pekka Rinne is not even arguably the best ever, unless someone else down the road comes along and kills it for the Predators. But he's first among Finland-born goalies in NHL regular season games, starts, wins, and shutouts, had a career .917 save percentage, is tied with Tom Barrasso for 19th in NHL wins and 19th in shutouts. He won the Vezina Trophy in 2017 and 2018, and he's fourth among NHL goalies in goals against average who have played at least 350 games behind the Dominator himself, Dominik Hasek, Martin Brodeur, and Jacques Plante. He's one of 12 goalies with 350 wins and 60 shutouts, and 8 of them are in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Rinne was quoted saying, quote, "For more than 15 years, I've been on an incredible, life-changing journey with the Nashville Predators that has taken me to more places than I could have ever imagined and given me more than I could ever hope to give back. This decision wasn't easy, but I know this is the right one at the right time." So, let's see. Where am I going from here? Oh, so I guess most notably, he helped Nashville advance to the 2017 Stanley Cup Final, but they did lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins in 6 games. But that was one hell of a run for Nashville. And then, I mean, you saw it the past couple years or so where his play did go downhill. And then we saw the emergence of UC Saros for the Nashville Predators, who I'm assuming
they drafted Askarov.
Yeah, so it's definitely time for Rinne to hang up the skates. But fun fact, I actually have a Pekka Rinne bobblehead that I got at a Predators game in Nashville. So that's definitely worth a little bit more now. And Rinne is just a guy where, like, even if you're not a Predators fan, you always just kind of rooted for him. Where, like, I mean, at least I did, because, like, I don't know. I guess, yeah.
He did, like, score a goal.
Yeah, I was going to – he has one career goal, which is cool, against Chicago, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But, I mean, just always a great guy, just was always in the mix when it came to top goalies in the NHL for most of his career. So congrats on your retirement, Rinne, and we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, Rinne was a guy. He was one of the best. He would probably be remembered as one of the best Finnish goalies to ever play in the league. Mm-hmm. It just sucks he can never put it together with that Nashville Predators team. They blew it against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yeah, you could definitely tell the past couple of seasons his play really, really dipped to where he wasn't the same goalie anymore. But it was a hell of a run and a hell of a career, you know, and I just hope he enjoys retirement now. He's definitely earned it. You know, that scoring a goal as a goalie is a pretty big deal. And, you know, he's won a Vezina as the league's best goalie once. So, you know, he's leading in all numbers with Nashville Predators history. They will probably raise a banner for him because they love to do those in Nashville, but rightfully so. I feel like I could see easily.
Well, this time they deserve yes. to raise a banner.
Yes, I definitely feel like Rinne deserves his number being retired with the Nashville Predators. I don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy. Didn't win a cup, only won Vezina, didn't do too much, didn't really do anything internationally.
Yeah.
So he's like one of those really good goalies and good players that will forever be remembered in his city, but unfortunately, he didn't get all the way, so you don't qualify for the Hall of Fame in my eyes, personal. But I'm a tough critic, so
I can agree with that. But again, Rinne, congratulations on your retirement. We wish you the best of luck. And we go from the Music City to Beantown in Boston, where it was announced earlier today that Kevin Miller retired from the NHL, ending a 7-season playing career, all with the Boston Bruins. He was quoted on his Instagram saying, "Although my spirit for the game is there, unfortunately my body isn't. My overall health and my family are now the priority. This was not an easy decision to make, but it's time to hang up my skates." According to NHL.com, the 33-year-old defenseman could have been an unrestricted free agent on the 28th of this month. He scored 4 points in 28 regular season games and had 1 assist in 4 Stanley Cup playoff games this past season. However, he did sustain a season-ending ending injury during game four of the Stanley Cup first round against the Capitals after he was hit by defenseman Dmitry Orlov in the second period. I believe his retirement is mainly obviously due to concussions, and I think he's also had lingering knee problems after surgeries on his knees in the past. So it's just, it's unfortunate to see that he has to retire so early. 33 is kind of young for an athlete these days. But it's, I mean, he's, I think he's making the right decision where, like you said, his overall health personally and his family are his top priority. And that's, I mean, that's what these guys do it for the most part. Aside from winning that Stanley Cup, they want to provide for themselves and their family and just have a successful playing career and just kind of go on with life after hockey. So, Miller, again, we wish you the best in retirement. I'm sure he wants to go further in his career, but it just obviously sounds like he can't. But
yeah,
it's, I think, he again, he's making the right choice.
Yeah, he's definitely doing the right thing. Miller, not a by any means an all-star defenseman. He's a bottom-pairing number four guy in a pinch, physical, bruising, hard-to-play-against, like, asshole defenseman that every team loves to have. And he played really well for the Spoke to be a lot for his 7-year career with the Boston Bruins. Played college hockey at the University of Vermont, I believe, was the captain of that team when he was there. So he was overall, he was a great locker room glue, physical guy. And unfortunately, those guys, you know, their role takes a toll on their body. And you know, he's got a young family and he wants to be around. So he's doing it. And he's retiring for all the right reasons. So wish him nothing but the best. And I'm sure you'll probably see him in some. He's a New England guy. I'm sure you'll probably see him in some capacity, you know, working for the Bees with some role.
Yeah, soon. Yeah, definitely. Well said. And staying in Boston, we had more news come out today about defenseman Brandon Carlo signing a 6-year, $24.6 million contract to stay with the Bruins with an average annual value of $4.1 million. He was slated to become a free agent on the 28th of this month. But now he won't, but, he was quoted saying, "Feeling over the moon today. This is a huge day for me and my family." Carlo scored 4 points in 27 regular season games, missing time because of a concussion and an upper body injury. However, he did not score a point in 8 Stanley Cup playoff games, but did average ice time of 22:30 per game and was second on the Bruins to defenseman Charlie McAvoy. Carlo did say he has felt healthy for, quote, well over a month and will resume skating next week. He was quoted saying, "I never felt in any way, shape, or form that my career was going to be ending anytime soon. I think just going through all of these situations, I've learned more and grown a lot from it. From the focal point of it, it was going to affect me going forward. I don't feel that way. I'm still a young guy. I still feel very sharp in my mind. I feel great in my body, and that was not a concern of mine." Obviously, the Bruins did lose to the New York Islanders in 6 games in the second round of the playoffs, the second consecutive season they've been eliminated from the playoffs in the second round. But Carlo, congrats on the new ticket. I hate how every player almost on the Bruins takes these, like, team-friendly deals, but I don't really see Carlo as an elite defenseman anyway. So, I mean, it is what it is for me. He's a good
second pairing defenseman. That's what he is.
Yeah.
He's a good 3-4. Who knows? He could develop into, like, a top pairing league defenseman. He's got all the skill set. Big, physical, right-handed, has a good sense in the defense zone, has a good chance to run, to, you know, pinch up and join the ozone rush. It's a good signing for the Boston Bruins. You know, they need to build that decor around him and, you know, Charlie McAvoy. And it's a nice piece for them. And, hey, you know what? Those good teams that are always winning and always in the hunt, guys want to stay there. So they say, hey, I'm willing to take on a team-friendly deal if it means we get another stab at a Stanley Cup. You know, it's what you hope eventually the Flyers can become. And that's what, you know, that's the whole goal.
Yeah. Yep. Well said, Dave. Going from a new contract to a pair of contracts that will be bought out, we head up to Minnesota, where it was brought to light yesterday that the contracts of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter will have the final four seasons bought out by the Minnesota Wild. Parise and Suter each signed a 13-year, $98 million contract back on July 4th, 2012, and can sign with any team when free agency begins on July 28th. Parise was quoted by The Athletic saying, "It's really tough to look back on everything from a hockey standpoint, but I'm not going to sit here and say I didn't enjoy it because I did. It's just unfortunate that this is where we are today. This wasn't part of the plan when Ryan and I signed here. I didn't think." Suter was also, he wasn't quoted. But it seems like it didn't seem like it. You could kind of see the writing on the wall where they signed those contracts. Those, what, how many? 9 years ago now. Jesus.
Yeah.
But you saw the writing on the wall, like I said, where their performances dipped as the years went on. Parise is 36 now, and Suter is also 36. And their production has steadily gone down. And the Wild obviously saw that too. Their GM, Bill Guerin, was quoted saying, We just felt like doing both was, it was the right time. I don't know how that sentence works there, Bill. But also, quote saying, like I said, I didn't just wake up this morning and try to decide to do it. It's been a process, probably about 6 or 8 months, and there's been a lot of discussions, a lot of conversations over it, and on both of them. We know how much they've meant to this team and to the city. So like I said, these are not great choices to make. They are not great decisions to make, but you have to make them and you have to stand by them. And then ramifications going forward. I don't have the exact numbers here, which is bad radio, but the Wild will obviously... Oh, here we go. I do have the numbers. I lied. So this says, NHL.com, the buyout frees up more than $10 million in NHL salary cap space next season, then $2 million the following season before the savings decrease in 2023 and 24, as well as 2024-25. Suter and Parise will then account for a $1.6 million salary cap charge for four seasons beginning in 2025-26. So there's your numbers there for how this will affect the Wild going forward. But as stated before, both players will be slated to be free agents coming up on the 28th of this month, just about actually 2 weeks from today. So, but... I kind of don't want to throw this out there, but I do. Ryan Suter to the Flyers?
I've seen a lot of that. And at first I was like, hell no. Stay far, far away, Chuck Fletcher. He is the one who signed both of them to join the Minnesota Wild when he was the GM at the time. But then taking a step back and thinking about it, Ryan Suter is not the defenseman the Flyers need.
Yes.
But if he would come here and he would be fine with taking league min or $1.5 million on a 1 year deal or 2 year deal, he would be a nice addition as a number four, number five guy, second pair pinch. Second guy pairing in a pinch or a bottom, a third pair guy, penalty kill, locker room leadership. He would be a good fit there. And they definitely should stay away from Zach Parise. They do not need Zach on this team.
No.
I saw a lot of rumors that you might see if Tampa sheds the right salary, Suter goes down to Tampa to try to win a cup. I could really see the Islanders adding Parise because of that history with Lou Lamoriello and Zach.
And they also have Palmieri and Zajac.
They're essentially the New Jersey Devils, across the sound.
The Long Island Devils.
Yeah, pretty much. Both Mickey Mouse organizations, as I like to say. it stinks, for the guys, but now they're free agents and they might have a chance to go somewhere where they're going to win a cup. Because I don't think Minnesota is going to be near that in any time in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a smart move for Minnesota. While it does give them a whole lot of dead cap headache, it does clear salary cap room to re-sign Kirill the Thrill Kaprizov. who was rumored he turned down a $9 million per year by 8 year deal because he's looking to only take on a 4 or 5 year extension because he feels in 4 or 5 years he's going to be worth, he's going to be, you know, a $10, $11, $12 million player. So have fun with that, Minnesota, because you're going to need lots of cap room for that. But, you know, this is kind of, everyone knew when Parise and Suter signed these contracts and essentially created the last lockout that we had. You knew this is how it was going to end, but I would have thought a buyout wouldn't have happened for at least after one or two more seasons.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing you can do now, and it's also good for the Wild in their case that they can protect two more guys in the expansion draft.
Yep.
So there are, I think, I'm confident when I say there are better players on Minnesota than Suter and Parise.
Yes.
So they now have the chance to protect those two potentially better players. So good for Minnesota, but also, I mean, if they don't get Kaprizov back and they lose, well, yeah, if they don't get Kaprizov back, they lose Suter and Parise. Whatever else may happen with them, they could revert back to the white bread of the NHL.
If it happens, it happens.
I was going to say, no skin off my back, but...
Exactly. I ain't a Wild fan, so...
We are going to transition here from Minnesota to both Edmonton and Chicago, as we had the first of what will likely be many deals when it comes to trades this offseason, with the Edmonton Oilers acquiring Duncan Keith from Chicago for Caleb Jones and a conditional pick in the 2022 NHL draft. Edmonton also received minor league forward Tim Soderlund. Duncan Keith, who turns 38 on Friday, has two seasons remaining on a 13-year, $72 million contract he signed back on December 3rd of 2009. I think there was an article somewhere, I think it was The Athletic, that he had the statistically worst contract in the league. So good one, Edmonton. But and also, I think they're kind of getting a somewhat hollow shell of what Duncan Keith used to be. So also good one, Edmonton, question mark.
Yeah.
But this also, again, frees up one more slot for the Blackhawks to protect someone that they may not have had the opportunity to protect for the expansion draft.
And they're getting a good young defenseman.
Yes.
I like Caleb Jones a lot.
He's also Seth Jones' brother.
Yes.
Which drove the Seth Jones to Chicago talks into overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens with that as things progress here. But I guess it's a decent move for both teams, because Edmonton does get that veteran presence on the blue line with Keith. He's also still, I don't really pay attention to the Blackhawks, but like he's all right. He's a good defenseman.
He's okay.
Yeah. Nowhere near as good as he used to be.
No,
but
you're not getting Norris Trophy winning Duncan Keith. You know, he'll get points.
Yep.
Cause you know, he'll be passing that biscuit up to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So he'll get points, but like, yeah. He's nowhere near the level of defenseman he was in his prime when the Blackhawks were winning their cups. And the big thing, I'm not as opposed to this trade of the line as a lot of people on Twitter.com have been, but my big thing is Edmonton, you had Chicago by the balls. Duncan Keith literally told the Blackhawks, I only want to go to Northwest Canada. So that's either Vancouver, Calgary, or Edmonton. And Edmonton's my number one choice. And I feel like Ken Holland overpaid for him. Like, Ken, you had Chicago in your hand because Keith wanted out. He wanted a trade. And he said, Edmonton's where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you still gave up too much for him. Like, I don't get it at all. Like, I do. Ken Holland, like, he won all those, you know, Stanley Cups with Detroit, you know, GM'd them in their heyday. But he is not the same GM he once was. He has not changed his outlook on the game in over 20 years.
Yeah.
And I do not get what he's trying to do with the Edmonton Oilers. They have no top prospects. They have very little draft picks. And they are wasting the years of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be a something that's punishable to the fullest extent of the law.
By death.
You are doing hockey a huge disservice, Ken Holland. You are wasting away the two, arguably the two best players in the league right now. So, I mean, there are some good sides to Keith, like you mentioned. Veteran presence is still okay defensively. You know, he'll be a big key voice in that locker room, but I don't see it. You overpaid and you gave up Caleb Jones. And I think Caleb Jones has a chance to be a legitimate, like, really good second pair defenseman. And it's going to help Chicago in their retool slash rebuild. So good for the Blackhawks. You know, it's Duncan Keith's the player you kind of wish he would have retired and played his whole career with him. But his young son lives in an Edmonton, or his 8-year-old son lives in an Edmonton suburb. And due to COVID, I think he's only seen him once in the past year. So he's going back home. He's going to his family. And that's what's most important to him. He's won his cups. And hey, maybe we're all going to eat shit and we're all going to be wrong. And Duncan Keith is the piece that helps put Edmonton over the edge where they go on a nice playoff run and they do some damage. Who knows? That's the great thing about hockey. But as of right now,
I'm gonna hit my doubt button with that.
What?
I'm going to hit my doubt button with that.
You go ahead and do that. And you are rightfully so, because I'm agreeing with you there. I highly doubt that's going to happen. But you never know, and that's the great thing about this game that we love. And but as of right now, I think the Oilers screwed up big time. Ken Holland made a big mistake, and he overpaid for an aging veteran, okay defenseman.
Well said. I definitely agree with that. Moving on here, we go from one – trying to think of how to do this. Screw it. That's a segue. Didn't work. We go from Chicago to Colorado. There we go. We'll keep it simple there. But we have some quote-unquote yikes news for Avalanche fans, as it has come out the past couple of days that Captain Gabe Landeskog is unhappy he has not received a new contract from his team, The Athletic reported earlier today. In this article on NHL.com, as where we usually get all our stuff, the 28-year-old forward can become a UFA for the first time on the 28th of this month, but does want to stay with Colorado, who selected him with the number 2 overall pick back in the 2011 NHL draft. The captain was quoted saying he would have liked his contract, quote, to be done 8 months ago, maybe even 10 months ago. He was also quoted saying, "The uncertainty is something I've never dealt with. I've always known that come September, October, I'm going to pull on that Avs jersey. I can't help but be honest with you that I am a little bit disappointed that it's gotten this far and it's come to this point." Landeskog scored 52 points in 54 games this season for the Avs, who won the President's Trophy for the best record in the NHL regular season. He then scored 13 points in 10 games in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but Colorado, as we know, was eliminated in 6 games by the Vegas Golden Knights in the second round. Landeskog was named captain of the Avs back on September 4th of 2012 and has scored 512 points in 687 regular season games and 45 points in 49 playoff games. He was also quoted saying, "We'll see what happens. I'm still hopeful that we can agree on something and come to terms." But also Avalanche forwards Brandon Saad and Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, also goaltender Philip Grubauer, and defenseman Cale Makar, actually, so Saad, Bellemare, and Grubauer are set to become UFAs, while Cale Makar will become an RFA. So there's also rumors that someone could offer sheet Makar. So we'll see what happens with that. But sounds like the Avs need to get their ducks in a row here, Dave.
Definitely. You know, they had a whole lot of cap space last year, and then it kind of disappeared really quick. You know, Brandon Saad's not coming back. That's a guaranteed. Cale Makar is going to get paid. And I think Philip Grubauer is going to get a raise for being a Vezina finalist. You know, he didn't play that great in the playoffs. But he was a Vezina Trophy caliber goaltender this past year, so he's going to get a bit of a raise. And, you know, Gabe Landeskog's their young captain. He's been their captain since he was 19 years old, his second year in the league. So it really sucks for Avs fans to see these things not go where they want to go. And Super Joe has his work cut out for him. You know, it's a really, this is a big off season. This is a team that is poised, and I feel like they're the next Tampa. Like before Tampa won their back-to-back cup, sure, like it's not a matter of like, you know, how, it's a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I feel about this Colorado Avalanche. Like, I feel like it's only a matter of time before they take the step and go to the, you know, the hockey peak and win the cup. But to do that, they need to find a way to get Makar signed and Landeskog signed and Grubauer signed. I don't think Grubauer is as big of a piece as Landeskog and Makar are. But Joe Sakic definitely has to work some GM magic, and I feel for Avs fans because you got a hell of a team out there. I mean, looking ahead real quick, you know, obviously, Eric Johnson did waive his no move for the extension draft. So if Seattle wanted to, they could pick Eric Johnson, which I believe would get about $6 million off of Colorado's books, which would help out big time. I just don't see them doing that, though. But if for some reason, you know, if Landeskog does end up leaving Colorado in free agency, you know, Nate Dogg is getting the captaincy. But that is something that we'll address if the time or the event happens. But Joe Sakic has his work cut out for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I saw somewhere, too, I don't know if it's a – it might just be a rumor or, like, a wish, but – maybe Colorado bring back the Yeti foot on their jersey for their shoulder patches.
Bring back the Yeti foot and bring back the black in their uniforms.
Dude, I love it without the black, honestly.
I grew to be okay with it, but they too much blue. Much blue.
Blue's my favorite color, so.
I mean, it's one of mine, too, but just with the Avs uniforms, you need that black, that contrast against the burgundy and the blue and the silver and the white. You just need it.
I don't know. I like it. But anyway, Dave, we'll wrap stuff up here with a couple more things, a couple more items of business before we end for this week. I will preface with this, that this is pure. So, all right, I'll preface with this before I preface again. But the preface to
a double preface?
The preface to the preface is that it is known that
the assistant to the regional, the assistant to the assistant of the regional manager.
Yes, precisely. But the preface to the preface is that it is known that Vladimir Tarasenko does want out of St. Louis. And now the question is, where does he want to go? And we do have somewhat of an answer to that question. If I can find it on my phone. Standby. Here we go. So it was reported by Jeremy Rutherford, who I believe is an Athletic writer.
That sounds about right.
I think, yeah. Sorry, Jeremy, if I'm miscrediting your source. But Jeremy Rutherford, a hockey reporter, I believe, who is with the Athletic. I'll say that. But someone paraphrased a tweet from him and said that Tarasenko has given the Blues a list of at least 10 clubs to which he can be traded. So this is also from Puck Report NHL, which I am not going to read too much into because they have 16,000 followers on Twitter, but it's also could be like, it seems like a rumor mill, but anyway, mm-hmm. I'll read this just to get to stir the pot a little bit. They said they think they know a majority of them, and they are the Rangers, Islanders, Golden Knights, Bruins, Flyers, eyes emoji, but they also added the Lightning, Capitals, and Florida Panthers to that list as well. So a bevy of teams that Tarasenko could end up with on this list. He could end up with none of them and go to some other team, but I mean, again, that's the preface to the preface, and the preface is that there is a lot of speculation that will be happening from now until anything becomes official. So, as we said in previous off seasons around this time, make sure you look for those blue check marks surrounding these accounts. And as we've seen in the media in general in the past as well, it's not always good to be first, but to be accurate. So, check your sources, double check your sources, all that jazz. But hey. I love a good speculation rumor. And and again, I also heard that if Tarasenko were to come to the Flyers, it would be for Morgan Frost and Phil Myers. But Dave, you have different thoughts.
Yeah, I would. I'm fine with getting Morgan Frost to get a piece like that back. I personally, out of our two young defensemen that are really shit on a lot on Twitter.com and Travis Sanheim and Phil Myers, I would personally try and sway St. Louis to take Sanheim. I get why they want Myers, you know, and it's the same reason why I want the Flyers to keep Myers. You know, he's 6'5", right-handed, good two-way defenseman. Those don't grow on trees. They're rare things. And while he did have a down year, I think Phil Myers still has a chance to rebound and be a legitimate top four defenseman. And I think he has a higher ceiling than Travis Sanheim. But that being said, though, you can't pass up on the opportunity to get a if you can get a healthy Vladimir Tarasenko, he checks off so many boxes the Flyers need. Like, he is a shoot-first 40-goal scoring winger that you can put on a top line, you know, with Tarasenko, Couturier, and Farabee.
Yeah.
And good Lord, you know?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, sweet Lord. So that would be awesome, but, you know, we got to see if it actually happens.
Well, also, yeah, and
but that'd be the big that would be a big name that would get a lot of Flyers Twitter happy, I feel like.
Yeah, and like I would definitely be happy with it too for the right price, but
Tarasenko is also price has to be right.
Exactly. Great show, by the way. But I also think that it worries me a little bit with how injury prone Tarasenko has been recently as well. So it would suck a lot if they did deal for him and then he was out for an entire season and then
that'd be peak Flyer though.
Yeah, I mean that would just be our luck with the Flyers where it's like we can't have nice things. But again, it's all speculation at this point, but it is a fact that Tarasenko does want out of St. Louis and it'll just be a matter of time until we see where he does go. But
I think he probably gets moved Friday night, the draft.
I don't want him. I've said this to my other friends too, but he can go to the Metro only if it's with the Flyers, because if not, then I'm not going to like it.
I do not want a healthy Vlad Tarasenko in our division.
Exactly. No,
there's enough firepower that is lined up against this team. No, thank you. No me gusta. Yeah.
Exactly. But moving on from that, we are again in the waning days leading up to the expansion draft with the Seattle Kraken. And Dave, I'll just give everyone a refresher here on the rules to the expansion draft, since we probably won't be recording until after the draft. Yes. So I'll update our fans on how things will go down on next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock on ESPN2. But let me just make sure I have the right article here. We are good to go. So if you didn't know, it will be under the same rules for the Kraken as the Vegas Golden Knights back in 2017. The Kraken will select one player from each team, excluding the Golden Knights, for a total of 30 players, at least 14 of them being forwards, 9 being defensemen, and 3 being goalies. Seattle must choose a minimum of 20 players under contract for next season, and those with an aggregate expansion draft value that is between 60 and 100% of the prior season's upper limit for the salary cap. Also, the Kraken cannot buy out players chosen in the expansion draft earlier than the summer following their first season, so they can't buy out anyone prior to this season. Yeah. Currently, NHL teams can protect 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie, or a total of 8 skaters and 1 goalie under the following conditions. And those lists will be submitted on the 17th, this coming Saturday, as we did mention earlier in the podcast. And lastly, we have the Kraken have an exclusive window from the 18th to the 21st to interview and potentially sign pending free agents who are left unprotected in the expansion draft. If they sign a player in that window, it does count as their pick from that player's former team. There are more rules here, but they are kind of a lot more technical, so I won't read over them, but I forget what I was going to say. It's interesting, though, because aside from all these rules that are part of the expansion draft, I think we'll start to see other teams, GMs, try and, for lack of better terms, bribe Seattle into not taking certain players. Yeah, so we're going to definitely see a lot of that in the coming days, which I am excited about because we'll see what these other teams, GMs, are willing to do so that Seattle doesn't scoop up some of their stars.
Yeah, definitely. And you're hoping the Flyers can convince Seattle to take Jake Voracek.
I will say it again. I think either Voracek, Ghost, or JVR is going to Seattle.
I don't think Ghost is going because Ghost and Dave Haxall did not like each other. And that was well documented throughout Philadelphia sports media. So I think Ghost
Or does Ghost get traded?
I mean, at this point, if he does, okay. Like, it sucks the Flyers literally wasted him and ruined. Like, the Flyers would have ruined Shane Gostisbehere if they do that. I have not, and will not give up on Shane Gostisbehere. Just because I like him too damn much.
Yeah.
But if he gets, at this point, if he's part of a deal where we get a good return for him, I'm not going to complain. I just want this team to contend. That's all I care about.
The first round pick is available for the right price.
Now, if you can,
Chuck Fletcher.
If you can pair Ghost and the first round pick, and you can bring in either a defenseman that we need back or a shooting first winger, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, full on, Chancellor Palpatine, do it, boys.
I can dig it, but yeah, I mean, I'll end things for myself tonight by saying that I think we're heading into exciting times around the league where we're going to see a lot of, I guess, beautiful chaos because we'll see rumors aplenty. We'll see hopefully trades aplenty, the expansion draft, the entry draft coming up, free agency coming up. Also, I believe the schedule for next season will be coming up soon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get that 82-game slate back and the old divisions back. Back to quote unquote normal, as we've been saying throughout this whole pandemic. But at this point, I'm just here for the ride. And
yeah,
Dave, that's all I got to say. And I'll throw it over to you to wrap things up.
Yeah, I am here for the ride. I'm looking forward to watching the draft. I will be away on a bachelor party that weekend. And I know the plan is to get all the boys together to watch the draft Friday night. So there could be copious amounts of alcohol and beverages being had whilst during watching the draft. So the Flyers do something stupid, you'll probably hear about it on my social medias.
When we lose, we booze.
Exactly. Beers will be flowing. But with that, you know, we will be back the week after all the drafts to, you know, summarize and refresh everyone on what the Flyers did. Because not only, remember, the draft's just not one night, people. We've got Friday nights just round one, and Saturday is rounds 2 through 7. And big name players are taken in every round of the draft in the NHL. It's not just a one round draft. So we will be here to summarize everything in 2 weeks from now. So thank you everyone for your listenership. We hope you all had a great 4th of July holiday, and we are now getting to the dog days of summer and the hockey season's picking up, and it'll be the beginning of next season before we know it. So with that, we will see you all in 2 weeks, and let's go Flyers.